Welcome to Spilling the Chemist's Tea. I am your host, Dr. Rachel Hall, the Director of Education and Outreach and Diversity for the Center for Selective CH Functionalization, or CCHF, a National Science Foundation Center for Chemical Innovation. Today, I'm talking to Nick Garcia, a graduate student in the Sorensen Lab at Princeton University. He's also one of the wonderful graduate students helping me with this podcast endeavor, and he wrote our theme music. He is a delight, and I'm excited to share his interview with you. Who are you and what are your pronouns?
My name is Nick Garcia. I'm a fourth year PhD candidate in Sorensen Group at Princeton University. My pronouns are he, him.
Tell me a little bit about your research.
I work broadly in chemical synthesis, specifically in the synthesis of complex small organic molecules. I've worked on a variety of them. But right now I'm working on the synthesis of a set of alkaloids known as the Saccharinaca alkaloids. And we're trying to achieve them in a really fast approach.
Cool. Where did you grow up and what was your first experience with science?
I grew up in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Sort of the south side, there's a large population of Mexican immigrants there, and that's where my parents settled down. I was born in America. I was born there in Oklahoma. My first experience with science, I don't know, besides just like science classes, I think they were all like academic. Yeah. I guess the first experience outside of school was probably the X-Files. The main character, Scully, she studied physics. You know, she was a forensic pathologist, I believe is the word. The first episode actually has them look at an organic molecule. And she's like, oh, it's very weird. It was just a tripeptide. It was very simple. But I thought that was pretty cool. I watched that a lot with my sister when I was growing up.
Well, what made you decide to pursue chemistry?
Well, I didn't want to go into STEM until about my senior year in college. High school. I wanted to do music. I did a lot of music throughout grade school, and I got pretty good at that. But you can't make a lot of money, right? Usually, you got to be very lucky to make a ton of money. And, you know, growing up, like, low income, I knew I wanted something with a little bit more financial stability and more opportunity for growth. And my sister told me, you know, you could get into like some really good schools because she saw my test scores. And so I applied. I got into MIT. I was like, well, I guess I'll do like some sort of STEM, you know. Yeah. And so I planned on doing chemical engineering. But then my freshman year, I took organic chemistry and I really fell in love with the subject. And so I declared chemistry and the rest is history.
Yeah. Well, when did you decide to go to graduate school from there?
My sophomore year, towards the end of the spring semester, I joined the Mobisagi group at MIT, where they do complex natural product synthesis. He's also within the center. That's sort of what my mentor and I talked about. You know, she was a graduate student and she mentored me. And from what I was told, in order to have like upwards mobility within like a company and industry, you need a PhD in chemistry. And so that's why I decided to pursue one. I thought about, you know, taking some years off to just, you know, work in like industry maybe. But I think a lot of people who do that usually end up going back to get their PhD. And I just wanted to sort of, maybe this is a bad way of looking at it, but get it out of the way.
Just keep making progress.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you already know that's where you want to end up, then why wait? Mm-hmm. What have you liked the most so far about grad school?
I really appreciate the flexibility in the schedule, especially working for Eric. You know, he's not one that's going to keep a close eye on you. You know, if you're making progress, he's happy. And so it's really nice, especially now that I'm dating. if a guy just asks me out, you know, on a random Wednesday, I'm like, yeah, I can do that. And I'll just like work maybe a little more so that Saturday or Sunday or something like that. And so it's very flexible. You know, there are a few meetings here and there that I have to keep marked off. But other than that, you know, it's really up to me when I'm going to work. So I like that aspect a lot.
What have you liked the least so far about grad school?
You know, just the whole thing. I'm kidding. It is a marathon and it's very hard. And I think it's all about like state of mind. You have to realize that it's not your fault that the chemistry doesn't work. Although a lot of people like really internalize, you know, the failures. But, you know, chemistry is finicky and it just doesn't work sometimes. And you just got to keep trying, you know, different things. I think just not taking the chemistry personally has been the hardest part.
Yeah, definitely. Especially for a lot of us that decide to keep going because we did well in undergrad, but they're very different mm-hmm. benchmarks in graduate school than in undergrad.
Absolutely. You're trying to generate new knowledge rather than memorizing or learning known knowledge. And so it's a different set of skills.
Well, has grad school been what you imagined it would be?
Yeah. I did 2 years of undergrad research, and I really saw, you know, how the grad students, how they spent their time, how they lived, what their days were like. And it's been pretty much that for me.
What is a typical day like for you? I know you mentioned you have some flexibility, but what does it normally look like?
I guess during COVID, get up, have my coffee. I work out, and then I'll head to lab. I was on the evening shift for a long time, so that was like 3 p.m. But now that's loosening back up, and so I'm trying to push it earlier and earlier. Try to spend at least like 8 hours in lab. It's a lot of just, you know, being at the bench, doing manipulations. I try not to be at my desk too much, because to me, like, being at my desk is something I can do at home.
Yeah, definitely.
And so I really try to be at my bench as much as possible.
Yeah. Well, what do you want to do after graduate school and beyond?
I honestly don't know.
That's fair.
Industry is my current answer, pharma. I may have to do a postdoc, which is fine, but I think industry is where I'm currently heading. And then after that, I really have no idea what's like possible in terms of moving up in a company. I see some like LinkedIn profiles where, you know, it's research chemistry, a PhD chemist, you know, in pharma, and they're at the same position or very similar positions after like decades or two. And I don't think that I want that to be me. And so we'll see.
But what are you besides a scientist, and what do you do outside of lab?
I like going out, which has been, you know, difficult. I like going to the movies, going out to bars. In terms of hobbies, I play a lot of music, which is something I was able to do a little bit more over quarantine, the lockdown. So that was really nice. I play the banjo mostly. I picked that up like 2 years ago, and that's been a ton of fun. It's also been really nice because when you do have like a Zoom meeting, I can just like keep it out of frame, but I can play along, you know, watch a meeting. It's a really easy way to practice. But I also have a keyboard, I have a flute, and so I whip those out every now and again.
What is the future of science, and what do you hope your role is in that?
The future of science. I don't know about the future of science. I guess like the big thing, the big like buzzword is like artificial intelligence and like quantum computing and that sort of stuff. Like stuff I probably would never work on in my life, but I've known people who do, and it sounds really interesting, but also way above my head. Yeah, it is interesting with AI. There's this idea of like the singularity. And I read this science fiction story one time by Ted Chiang, I think. He's the guy who wrote the short story that Arrival, that movie, is based on.
Oh, yeah.
But he wrote a story about how AI reached that singularity, and then all these different AIs just pushed science forward themselves without people. And like they took care of people, but people were not involved at all. It was just these AIs like producing these publications that people didn't understand. And the only like scientific endeavor left for like humans was trying to decipher these publications as much as possible. And so that, like, I don't know, is that concerning? Is that dystopic, or is that just nice?
I think the role of computing is going to change so much. And I'm excited and interested in hearing how that's going to keep changing.
Yeah, I mean, with machine learning, there's these softwares, you know, that come up with synthetic routes or models that algorithms that optimize reactions and stuff like that. And so they're really coming for organic chemistry real hard and real fast. But that's exciting. In terms of the body of science, like the people, of course, I would love to see it be more diverse moving forward, more women, more people of color, and more underrepresented minorities. And that seems to be the trend with all these protests that happened last year. It seemed to be like galvanizing the community a little bit, but it doesn't seem to be maintaining that push, and that's a little disappointing to me. But, you know, I think people who have cared about it historically will continue to care about it and will continue to be driving that change. And there are little victories here and there. You know, they're taking off the GRE at a lot of places, including the chemistry GRE.
Yeah, they're going to have to keep thinking about what are these barriers that have historically been in place that we don't really need to have a good and productive body. And also, what is a good and productive body? You know, all these definitions and criteria that we've had forever because they worked for single straight white guys.
Yeah.
Then realizing that that doesn't work for everybody and it shouldn't have to produce good science. Are you ready for the high throughput round? What is your favorite hot drink?
I guess coffee.
What would you be if you weren't a scientist?
Probably a country folk star.
Ooh, that sounds like fun.
But I'd
come listen to you.
Thank you. Yeah, I picked up the banjo and I've been playing more bluegrass. I mean, I like country, but I've gotten more into bluegrass because I have to, because there's some music available. There shouldn't be something ironic with like a queer person of color playing the banjo, but there is. And I think, you know, some country music fans, they can be sort of puritanical is the way I will phrase that. So I think there's something irreverent about it, but I mean, I love it.
If you could be, if you were a piece of glassware, what would you be?
I think I'm just going to say the easy answer, a round bottom, because like everybody likes them, you know, they're always appreciated and you want more. You always want more round bottom.
What is your favorite place in the world?
I guess anywhere where people I care about are at. I always attach a lot of memories to places when I have like a good time with like someone, like a friend or family member. And so I think that's where the value in like a place comes from. It's like the connections you have there.
If you could have any superpower, which would you choose?
I would have NMR vision. I could see what's in a flask just from looking at it. Optical spectroscopy, I guess.
What is a science-related thing that you learned recently that just blew your mind?
I listened to a podcast, a shortwave on NPR. And, conception. Apparently, there's this like misconception that during conception, all the sperm, the uterus is like a wasteland. It's very, they think of it like Mad Max for the sperm, but it's not. The uterus is like pulling them along. They're like cheerleaders at like a marathon, you know, they're helping them along, you know, they're giving them water. And I'm just like, wow, yeah. These men really had us believing that women had these barren wastelands.
What is your favorite part of being a chemist?
Setting up reactions. That is the coolest part. I think that's the part everyone loves, you know, setting up reactions, like making things go. Like
yeah.
Making like these chemical changes, working it up and purifying it. That part sucks. That part is horrible.
Yep.
I feel like the perfect, a three-person team would be like someone who loves setting up reactions, someone who loves working up a reaction, someone who loves columning a reaction. And that third person, that's the hardest find. That's the needle in the haystack, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But you get three of those people together, pumping out natural products left and right. You know? But yes, setting up like all the needles and stuff, working with chemicals, it's fun.
Yeah.
The color changes. We don't see a lot of color changes, but when we do, it's really cool. I think everyone's like, come look at my reaction. It's green, you know?
What do you want to be known for?
I'll start professionally and I'll just move out generally.
Okay.
Professionally, I want to be known as a good mentor. I had a really great mentor as an undergrad, and I think that really like made me want to be a good mentor. I've had four undergraduates so far, and I think they've liked me from what they've said. But I just really love like teaching people about like experimental chemistry or just like anything, just like helping people get to where they want to be. And when we get undergrads, they want to be like experimental chemists, and so I'm helping them gain those skills. And so I think if I come out of grad school with anything, I want to be known as someone who was a good mentor to their students. Personally, I want to be someone that like you want to be around, that you think is like kind, just a good friend to have.
Do you have any advice for younger students?
Advice for younger students, like in college?
Yeah, or people that want to go to graduate school or are interested in science?
I guess the best advice I can give is, if you need help with something, ask for it. That would have saved me a lot of time and personal turmoil if I had just recognized when you need help and asked for it. If that's like going to office hours or just like emailing your TA or professor, that if it's, you know, a little more dire, like mental health wise, I've also experienced that. Yeah. And it's very important when to realize when you need help and that you can't do everything alone. And I'm someone who's always recalcitrant to ask for help. I think because from a place of like pride and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, for real though. And giving yourself permission
to get help is important.
It also would have saved me a lot.
I think it would have saved, it would save everyone a ton.
Yep. But thank you so much for talking to me.
Mm-hmm. No, this is fun. Thank you.
To find us on the internet, check out nsf-cchf.com or nsf-cchf on Twitter and Instagram. Find me at rachelshall.com or rachelshall on Twitter. This episode was produced with help from Kevin Gonzalez, Nick Garcia, and Rio Febrian. Show art by Rio Febrian. Show theme written by Nick Garcia. Show edited by me. Thank you for listening. I hope you'll join us next time.